Okay, we're beginning here. Three lines from the bottom. Oh, Lamed Aleph Amud Bet. Tanu Banan. Ezehu Mura. Ve'ezehu Kibud. We know that we have a requirement with regards to parents of Ish Imo Vaviv Tirau, as well as Kabed Et Avicha Ve'etimecha. We might want to understand what are examples, or what is the nature of Yira, and what is the nature of Kibud. Mura means Lo Omeid Bimkomo. He doesn't stand in his place. And he doesn't sit in his place. That might be literally like within the household or the usual place where his father sits or his father stands, that he should not also stand and sit in that location. Or it could also mean that in places of kavod, where his father has a particular seat, whether it's in a political setting or it is in a place of kavod, that his father has a particular seat or a particular standing, that the son should not sit in that seat, should not stand in that location, but rather move away from there or put himself below where the father would sit. And that's even when the father is not present, that he shouldn't take over that position of the father. Velo soterit dvarav, and he does not contradict the word of his father. Velo machri'o, and he does not decide. Now, according to most, against his father, if there's a machloka between his father and someone else, he should not decide in favor of someone else. There are others that feel that even if he decides in favor of his father, it's also a lack of mora, because he is being machriya about his father, which indicates that he has some sort of authority or auspices to be machriya over here, making a decision that his father is correct. So even in that instance, maybe he cannot be machriyo. With regard to lo soteret dvarav, here you have the gamut of opinions as to where it is applicable. Is it only applicable by Divrei Torah, that one is not allowed to be soter tvarav? Some say it only applies by mundane matters. By Divrei Torah, we have to go after the emet. So even there, he's allowed to contradict his father. Or do we say that it applies across the board? That whether it's Divrei Torah, whether it's mundane matters, he's not allowed to contradict his father. But also here, the Tosfot Riha Zakein makes a qualification and says, the mistama dokohani dafka bichayav. Seemingly, all of these are only true while the father is still alive. But his father passes away, there's no longer that type of hakbada about being machriya, being soter tarav, yeshev bimkomo, made bimkomo, because it's only relevant while the father is still alive. Once the father has passed away, that yira is no longer relevant because he's not face to face with his father, or his father is not there for it to be deemed yira with regards to these requirements. Kibud, what is considered to be honoring one's parents? Machil u'mashkeh, you feed them, you give them to drink. Malbish u'mechaseh, you clothe them, you cover them. Machnis u'motzi, you take them in, you take them out, whether that means to accompany them, to melaveh them, or in times when they're older and they need help, that one helps them to enter and exit and helps them to move about. So the key difference here you can see is that Yira really focuses on what we call the lotase, on the things that you may not do, things that would contradict the standing of one's parents. That's what Yira is about. Kibud is what one must do actively in order to show honor or to elevate the status of one's parents. And that's the difference here between kibud and mora. And now the Gemara has the fundamental question, Ibayluhu, Mishelmi, whose money has to be used to accomplish this mitzvah? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishel Ben. It comes out of the son's pocket. The son has to expend money in order to accomplish the mitzvah of Kibud Ave'im. Rabbi Natan, Baroshaya Omer, Mishel Av. It has to come out of the pocket of the father. I mean, that the father has to make the expenditures from his own money, even though the son is carrying it out. So even though the son feeds the father or takes care of the father, that expenses are paid for by the father. Orile Rabbanon the Rabbi Yirmiya. So the Rabbanan gave a psak halacha to Rav Yirmiyah, v'amilah the braid of Rav Yirmiyah to the son of Rav Yirmiyah, k'mandamar mishel av, that the halacha is like Rav Natan Baroshaya, that you only have to do kibud out of aim, out of the means of the parents, or out of the estate of the parents. Tosafot over here says, mashma shekach halacha, from this gemara it sounds like this is the halacha, v'chein pasak b'shiltot Rav Achai. The Shoto Torah V'chai also paskins this way. What happens in a case where the father does not have the means to do it, but the son does have the means in order to provide for the father? He says over there, Chayav Ben Lazor Et Aviv, that he is obligated to feed his father in that instance. The Ri and the Rabbeinu Hananu also corroborate this psak of the Shiltot, that primarily, or at first look, we take from the father's estate in order to pay for it. If the father does not have the means to pay for it, but the son does have the means to pay for it, we will compel the son to Lazonet Aviv, to take care of his father. Now, the way that Tosafot frames it, then, is that because the son giving to the father should be no worse than him giving to anyone else. Meaning that the son, if he has the means to, has the obligation to do tzedakah. And when it comes to tzedakah, there is a hierarchy, which is the closer the relative, the more priority they have in terms of giving tzedakah. Same is true as to location. The closer the location, the more obligation on the individual. And therefore, the son has a obligation of tzedakah, would have to feed the parent, not because of the mitzvah of kibud av aim necessarily, but simply because of the mitzvah of tzedakah. And the priority or hierarchy of tzedakah would indicate that he has to give to the parent first, and that's why he's obligated when the father doesn't have it. And we will compel him to do that, because we do compel people to give tzedakah, as we see in other locations. There are other Rishonim who believe that the obligation on the son when the father doesn't have still stems from kibud av aim. And that they explain our Gemara as being only in a case where the father has the means by which to support the mitzvah of kibud av aim. Gemara never addressed that case, but Eino Hanami, if the father didn't have, the Gemara would have agreed that the son has to give his money. The only question of the Gemara was, if the son has the means and the father has the means, whose money do we use? And the Gemara's answer is that it's the father's money. But in a case where the father doesn't have money, the Gemara would believe that the son has to do it, mi mitzvat kibud av aim, and not mi mitzvat tzedakah. Veitavei, nemar kabed et avicha ve'et imecha, v'nemar kabed et Hashem mehunecha. These are psukim that we brought before that brought an equation of equivalence between kibud av aim and kibud Hashem. Mal halan b'chisaron kis, just like by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says mihonecha, that you have to give kavod to Hashem from that which you have been blessed with your own money, so you have monetary loss, quote unquote, in order to accomplish a mitzvah. Avkan b'chisaron kis. So to over here, by the case of a kabidat avicha ve'et imecha, you should also have an obligation to do it, even if it causes loss of money. And again, it's not a gzeira shava here, but rather a giloi milta about the meaning of the word kibud. V'yavart mishel av. On the other hand, if we paskin that the only obligation of kibud av aim is out of the father's monies, my nafkalei mino. What does it make a difference? Meaning that, what is the drush over here telling you about monetary loss? There's no monetary loss over here. It's the father's money that's being expended in order to accomplish this. Where it says the bitul melacha, the child still does lose money here because he gave up opportunity to earn money. Yes, he does the kibud av aim out of his parents' money, but while he's doing the mitzvah of kibud av aim, it still comes at an expense to him because he foregoes the ability to work and make money. So tashma betachim, if you have two brothers, shnei shutafim, you have two partners, ha'av ubno, a father and a son, harav u'talmido, a Rebbe and a student, podim zed ze maeser sheni. They can redeem each other's maeser sheni, and they are considered to be an acher. As we saw earlier in the Masechta, when you redeem your own maeser sheni, you have to add on a chomesh. When someone else redeems your maeser sheni, you do not have to add on that chomesh in the redemption. So despite the fact that these individuals have a relationship, and a strong relationship, nevertheless, when they redeem the maeser sheni for each other, they're still considered to be acherim. U'machilim ze leze maeser ani. And they can also provide for each other if that individual has maaser ani to distribute. They can distribute it to their partner, to their brother, and give the maaser ani to them. V'amart Michel Ben, if you say that the obligation is from the son's money to pay for kibud av aim, and you're saying in this brayta that you're allowed to give maaser ani from the son to the father, nimsa zeh parei chovo mishel aniim. That means that he's paying off his debts through money that is owed to the aniim. That's a general principle that we have with regards to maaser and obligations to give when you have to take off tithes or anything else, that you can't give those as payment in lieu of obligations that already exist. That if you owe the Kohen money, and then you give him truma to pay him back for that loan, that's problematic, because you already had an outstanding obligation. You can't use the truma to discharge that obligation. You have an obligation to give truma independent of whether you owe the Kohen money or not. And similarly over here, if there's an obligation on the child to provide for the father, then how can he be giving his father money at a maaser ani to feed him when he has a prior obligation to feed the father, irrespective of whether he has Maisra need to give or not. Oh, Tzricha Hadafa. Gemara says, no, it's for the excess amount. I mean that the son already feeds his father at a certain level, call it a middle class level, but the father wants something fancier or bigger. So he can use the Maisra Ani to enhance that which he gives to his father, because there's no longer an obligation on the son to do it, because he's already done what is obligatory upon him to take care of his parent. Now the parent wants more, he can use the Maisra Ani to enhance that which he gives. Where it says, Yihachi Hanuktani Allah, then how do you say that we have this qualification about that Braita? Amar Yehuda, Tavo Meira, the Mishim Achilat Aviv, Maiser Ani, that one should be cursed if they feed their father, Maiser Ani. So we can understand that if we're talking about the core obligation to feed one's father, and then we say that a person should be cursed if they feed their father or they provide for their father through Maiser Ani. On the other hand, if you're explaining this Braita to say that we're talking about the Maiser Ani here, to giving that enhanced portion to the father, Mainaf Kamina. So why does it matter? It's all about the enhancement for the father. It's not something where he's giving the core support to his father through Maiser Ani. Why would Rabbi Yehuda make such a strong statement against doing such? It's still not a kavod or kavodic way to provide one's parent, even if it's an enhancement or even it's excess that they're giving them. If they've accomplished the core obligation, still to enhance that through Maiser Ani is beneath the dignity or somewhat denigrating to the parent, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda still makes that qualifying statement, even if you say that it's speaking about hadafa. Tashma. Mark says, let's look at this. Shalu et Belazar, Adhechan kibud aveim. How far does kibud aveim go? Amalahem, Yideyoshi told Arnaki, Vizikrenuli yam bifanav. He takes a wallet and he throws it into the ocean in front of him, Ve'enu machlimo. And he does not embarrass him, he does not get angry at him. So it says, if you say that kibud aveim has to be accomplished through the money of the parent, what's the difference for the child? Now, it's one thing if the child's obligation is to provide the father, and then the father throws the child's money into the ocean, then you could say that the child would have gotten angry. And the kibud aveim here is the fact that he did not get angry when the father did this and threw it into the ocean. On the other hand, if you say that it comes out of the father's pocket, kibud aveim, then when the father throws his own wallet into the ocean, the fact that the child doesn't embarrass him or doesn't get angry about that is because he doesn't care. It's not his money. If it's not his money, then his father can do as he pleases with his money. Where it says, Biraui Liorsho, the case where he is the next in line, meaning that he is the inheritor of the father's estate. When the father throws away their future inheritance, then it does have a nafkamina to him, and therefore, even though the obligation of kibud aveim comes out of his parents' money, but if his father's throwing away his future inheritance, maybe that would be something where he would be makpid. And now he is foregoing that hakpada, or not embarrassing his father about it, so it does show some restraint, it does show some kibud aveim. So similarly, the Gemara here concludes that we're talking about the father throwing his own wallet into the ocean, and for that reason, the son may not be makpid, and Baro'oi Liorsho is what connects the son to the monetary loss over here. And the fact that he doesn't get upset is what is considered to be the kibud aveim. There are those that suggest that it's still talking about the son's wallet. And Baro'oi Liorsho means that even when the father throws the son's wallet into the ocean, and the son has no obligation to pay for his father's kibud aveim, quote unquote, so the father would have to repay the son for the loss generated by throwing the son's wallet into the ocean. But the problem is, or then the Gemara is asking, why is that considered to be kibud aveim? Is because of Bera Oili or Shom. And when the father has to expend the money to pay for the damage he did to the son, that diminishes from the inheritance the son will get in the future. So there is monetary loss to the son, even though he will be compensated for the whole loss over here. Nevertheless, there is still this loss, which is now he has foregone future inheritance in order to get payment for the reparations of what the father did. And they explained the Gemara in that way, that we're still talking about the son's wallet. The Rabba bar Rav Huna, similar to a case of Rabba bar Rav Huna, the Rav Huna kara shirai b'anpei Rabba b'rei. Huna tore some silk garment in front of Rabba, his son. Amar izel ichzei iratach ilo ratach. He wanted to test and see, is he going to get angry when I do this? Or is he not going to get angry? The Gemara says, what type of thing is this? How can you test him like this? Maybe he will get angry. And then it'll be in violation of causing or instigating someone to do an Aveira. Rav Huna over here, by instigating and provoking his son to get angry, in anger, which would be an inappropriate response here, it would be a lacking in Kibud Aveim, but he was the one who provoked or instigated it, and he's causing someone else to do an Aveira. So how could he put this test to his son? The Machil Elikare, that he forgave his honor, and that he was mochel on his kavod, and therefore he was not makpid on the fact that his son would get angry. Vakavar mishum bal tashchit. What about the fact that it's just a waste? Over here, the father's tearing the item up for no reason. He's wasting something that is valuable. That's a violation of bal tashchit, of just wanton waste, which is restricted midoraita. Davile bifumbiane. He did it along the seam, which makes it that it's easy to stitch back up, or it could be repaired, and it was not a permanent loss. Mar says, but maybe that's the explanation. Why did Rabba, his son, not get angry? Is because he saw he tore it along the seam. And so maybe that's not a real test. Mar says, he did it when he was already angry, or he was already incensed about something else, and therefore this would only have further incensed him or got him angry. He wouldn't have been so discerning. The fact that he didn't show that he was able to control his emotions or do kibud aveim properly in that instance. Now, Tosafot over here questions, how does it help by the fact that Rav Huna was mochel on of his kavod? Because we have a principle that we learn out in Nidarim, for instance, from a daughter or a wife, where the father or the husband is mechel their neder, nullifies their neder, but they don't know about it, and they go on to violate the neder. And over there, the Gemara learns that a person has to attain kapara for such activity, because even though it was mutar, they thought it was asur, and they did it thinking it was asur. And similarly over here, if the son didn't know that his father was mochel on the kavod, when he goes ahead and he's ratach and he gets angry, nevertheless, he's still in violation of an isur because he didn't know that his father was mochel on it. For that reason, Tosfot says here, Tzarech Lamar, Shodiyo Kodem Lechein, that he let him know ahead of time that he wasn't makpid and he was mochel on his kavod. So you have to ask on the Balei Tosafot then what type of test this was. Because if you already knew he's mochel on his kavod, then how is this really a test of kibud aveim? Could be that Tosafot's going to argue it was a time beritchei when he's already incensed about something else and people aren't so discerning then. Or you could suggest that he said this more generically at another time, and then in the heat of the moment, he just did this without explaining to him again or informing him again that he was mochel on his kavod. There are others, like the Ritva, who want to suggest over here that what the Gemara says about violating Isurim when you think it's asur, even though it wasn't asur to you, you need kapara, is only when we're dealing with a specific or maybe more severe Isur. When you're dealing with a generic Isur, like Lifnei Iver Lo Tiden Michshol, over there we don't say if you violate it, thinking that you're violating it, that it's called a violation, you need kapara, even though it was mutar at that time. And therefore, that's why over here, even if he didn't inform him about the fact that he was mochel on his kavod, that would have been sufficient grounds to protect him from violating the isur. And as we saw before, that we paskin that it is mishel ha'av, that it's out of the father's possessions or money that kibud aveim is done. And where the father doesn't have, we assume that the child has to step up if they have the means to do it, to provide for mazon and other needs of the parents. Again, we saw there was a machloket as whether that derives from the mitzvah of tzedakah or from the core mitzvah of kibud aveim. Tosafot also points out over here, even according to the one who says it's mishel ha'ben, he says that that is only true when the father gets benefit from the direct expenditure or the loss of the son. But if the son is going to incur a loss in order to perform kibud aveim, but that loss is not associated with a direct benefit to the parent, then the son's not obligated to undertake that loss, and he can protect himself against that loss before he performs kibud aveim. And an example that he brings over here is a case where nizdamin lo kibud av, that he had something to do for kibud aveim, avedat atzmo, he had also lost an object which he needed to find, avedat chavero, and also his friend lost something that she needs to return. And in that case, the question was, what gets precedence over here? Kibud aveim, his aveda, or the aveda of his friend? And Tosafot goes through the logic in each of these cases, what would take precedent. And in the end, he says, near the re, sheniach kvod aviv, avedat chavero, that he should forego doing the kibud avim and returning the lost item of his friend via sok ba'avedito, and then he'll deal with his own aveda. Da damar kibud av kodem. The only time that we say kibud av takes precedence is hainu dafka leniach laviv lasot ritzono bimomono. That's only to let his father get his desire with his money. The fish is zehu gufa kibud aval ba'avedito. Since the father doesn't get benefit from the loss itself, but the son does not have to let his item be gone and lost in order to provide for the father, because there's a disconnect between the loss incurred by the child and the kibud av aim that is being done. And over there, there's no obligation to incur losses that are not direct benefits to the parent. And so therefore, Tosafot says, even according to the one who says that it's Mishel HaBen, that's only in cases where the loss or the expenditure gives direct hana to the parent, not the incurrence of losses that has no direct benefit to the parent. And that might have enough kamina according to those that say, when the father doesn't have, that the son is obligated to provide mitzad kibud av aim, this would also define what would that obligation be on the son in terms of kibud av aim. And now the Gemara continues and says, Matne le Rav Yecheskel le Rami Brei. Rav Yecheskel was teaching his son Rami, Hanisrafim bin Niskalim. If Nisraim got mixed up with Niskalim, these are death penalties that are imposed by Beit Din. Nisrafim are those that are going to be burnt, as loosely termed, which the Gemara in Sanhedrin explains what that means, Sreifa. Niskalim are those that are going to be stoned. So over there, we have to make a determination as to which one is more chamor. Because when you have a mix-up of people that are subject to the death penalty, you can not upgrade their death, meaning give them a more severe death penalty. You can only downgrade their death in places of uncertainty. So over here, where we have some people that are subject to the mita of Nisrafim, some that are subject to the of Niskalim, then we will take the lowest common denominator between them, which is the lower mita, the less severe mita, we'll give to all of them, because that's subsumed in that is all the people that need to be killed in that manner. Plus, those that have to be killed in a more severe way, they're still being killed, at least in a easier manner, but they're being getting the death penalty. So Rabbi Shimon Omer, Yedonu B'Skila, Shesreifa Chamura. Over there, Rabbi Shimon believes that you have to give them all Skila, because Skila is a less severe death penalty than Sreifa. The Chachamim over there disagree with them and say just the opposite, that Sreifa is a less severe punishment, and therefore they should all get Sreifa rather than Skila. Amalei Rabbi Yehuda Brei. Rav Yehuda says to his father, Rav Yecheskel, who's teaching Rami, his brother, Abba, lo titnehachi. Abba, you can't say that. That's not the right way to say this. My iria sreifa chamura. Why does it matter, according to Rabbi Shimon, whether sreifa is the more severe punishment? Tibgalei deruba niskalim ninu. Why don't you just say it's because the majority over here are subject to the death penalty of stoning? Because you see over here, it says, Hanisrafim bin Niskalim. They got mixed up in a bunch of Niskalim, which makes it sound like the Nisrafim are the minority. They got mixed up in a majority of Niskalim. So for Rabbi Shimon, the reason why they should all get Skila is because Hokli Macharov, we go after the majority. Now it's true that if the majority punishment was the more severe punishment, we wouldn't go after the majority. But in this case, where you have both the majority and it's not a more severe punishment, the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon is simply that going after the rove of Niskalim. Elohachi Nayo. This is the way that you should say over this memra, Haniskalim bin Nisrafim. It's the stoned individuals who were subject to the death penalty by stoning got mixed up in Nisrafim, which means the majority are now Nisrafim, and the minority are Niskalim. And then it makes sense why Rabbi Shimon says the reason that they get Skila here is not because of the majority, they're the minority. But the reason they get Skila is because it's the less severe of the punishments. Amalei, Yochi, Ema Seifa. So, review, this is back to him. Then if you read it that way, then the Seifa, the Chachamim's position, seems not to make sense. The Chachamim Amim, Yedonu B'Sreifa. That the Chachamim say that they get Sreifa, Sheskila Chamura. Because they give the reason that Skila is a more severe punishment, therefore he gets Sreifa. Mayuria de Skila Chamura. Then for the Chachamim, you come up with the same question that you posed by Rabbi Shimon now applies to the Chachamim, which is, the reasoning is not because Skila is more Chamur, it's because the majority there are Nisrafim. So Rabbi Yehuda responds to his father and says, the Rabbanon are responding to Rabbi Shimon. They're not stating their position. They're just saying, according to you, Rabbi Shimon, we should follow the Rove, the Kamar Tzrifu Chamura. That you say Sreifa is Chamura, therefore we go after the minority of Niskalim. Lo, Skila Chamura, Skila is Chamura, and therefore we should go after the Rove there. They're not stating their position. They're just arguing on the premise that Rabbi Shimon uses to come to his conclusion. And therefore, that's not a question on them. So here, Rabbi Yehuda corrected his father, Yechezkel. And now, Amalei Shmuel, the Rabbi Yehuda. So Shmuel says to Rabbi Yehuda here, who is a Talmid of Rav, a Talmid of Shmuel, he says to him, Mishinana, you keen scholar, or in other places, some interpret to mean that you sharp-toothed one, long-toothed one, lo temelei avuchachi, you shouldn't be responding to your father in this manner, you shouldn't address him in this manner. The Tanya, Haresha Yaviv Overo Divrei Torah, in a case where his father is violating a precept of the Torah, Ayamor lo Abba Avartal Divrei Torah, you shouldn't directly confront him and say you are violating an Isra of the Torah. Elohim lo, he says to him, Abba kach katuv b'Torah. This is what is written in the Torah. Gemara says, kach katuv b'Torah, tzure kamitzarile. That if you say that this is what's written in the Torah, then you're also going to cause him pain. It's as if you're confronting him and making a statement of fact that he's doing something wrong, because this is what's written in the Torah. Elohim lo, on the other hand, he says to him, Abba mikra katuv b'Torah kach? Isn't there a pasuk in the Torah that says so-and-so? So, in that way, the first way was a statement of fact about what was in the Torah. And the Gemara rejects that because that would cause him pain, because it's as if you're confronting him with a violation of the Torah. On the other hand, if you do it in a questioning manner, which is, Abba mikra katuv b'Torah kach? Isn't there a pasuk in the Torah that says such-and-such? And then he will understand from himself that maybe he did something wrong, or maybe there's some contradiction between what he did and the pasuk, but you ask it in a questioning manner rather than a statement of fact. That's the way, as you can see in the Tosfot 3 Hazakein, it's the last couple words there, that the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rambam Pershu, Shomer lo kishuel velo kimachzir, that this last statement was a question or a bitmia and not a statement of fact. On the other hand, the Tosfot Ri Hazakein, just before that, explains this Gemara, just the opposite. That in the first instance, when he says to him, Abba kach katuv b'Torah, is that the way that it's written in the Torah? That was the first way to explain it. The Gemara says, if you do that, it makes it sound like you are confronting your father and saying, is that what it says in the Torah? And he said that derech bitmia, and that was the problem there, because tzurika mitzarile. Ella, the answer is, you just say the pasuk in the Torah, you say the din in the Torah as a statement of fact, not as a question. And then the father will understand for him himself that statement that you're bringing, or the pasuk that you're quoting, contradicted what he said before. Because the fact that you didn't say in a questioning manner makes it not necessarily directed at him. You're simply stating something from the Torah, and then he makes the connection between them. So according to the Tosfot Ri Hazakein, the problem with the first statement was it was done b'derech sheila. The solution is to say something derech nichuta, to make a statement. On the other hand, the way that the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rambam, they learned just the opposite. The first statement was a statement of fact, and that was why it was a problem. And therefore, we amend it to say that he did it as a question in order to solve that problem as being not confrontational with his father. Lazar ben Matyu Omer, Abba Omer Hashkeni Mayim, father says, please bring me something to drink. U'mitzvah la'asot. And there's an other mitzvah that you should do. Meniach ani kvod Abba. I would forego doing the kibud avim. And do this mitzvah. Shani v'aba chayavim b'mitzvah. Because both my father and I are chayavim to accomplish the mitzvah. This is learned in the Gemara and other places. Because it says, ish imo b'aviv tira'u, v'chabdutai tishmoru. And the Gemara learns from that there is an obligation to keep Shabbat, despite the fact that you have an obligation to fear your parents. Because you and your parents are chayavim to fear Hashem. And that means that where the parent asks you to violate a mitzvah, there's no obligation on your part to violate that mitzvah in order to accomplish kibud avim. So over here, the discussion amongst the Tanaim is, how far does that go? Meaning that what happens in a case where he's not directly contradicting or telling you to violate a mitzvah, but through kibud avim, the result will be that you'll have to forego a mitzvah. Is that included in this demand that you violate no mitzvot in order to accomplish kibud avim? And therefore over here, when he says, Hashkeni mayim, you forego that in order to accomplish the mitzvah? Or do we say that's only when his statement is in direct opposition to the ability to accomplish the mitzvah? So Isa ben Yehuda omer, im efshar le mitzvah le'asot ha'yedei achirim. If others can accomplish the mitzvah, te'aseh ha'yedei achirim, let others do it, v'yelechu b'chvod aviv. Then you will give precedence to kibud avim. So, according to the Tana Kama, kibud avim gets nitcheit mipnei another mitzvah, even if the mitzvah can be done by others, because your doing of the mitzvah would then mean that your father's demand for kibud avim is forcing you to forego a command of Hashem, and that you do not have to do. On the other hand, Isi ben Yehuda says, we'll have to look at the mitzvah that you're about to do. It's not that you're foregoing the mitzvah to do kibud avim, because if the mitzvah is being accomplished by others, then both can be accomplished here. The mitzvah will be accomplished, and so too you will accomplish kibud avim. And it's not as if you forewent doing the command of Hashem to accomplish kibud avim, because the mitzvah in the end will be accomplished by someone else. What's clear from both opinions is that if you're already involved in a mitzvah, then you do not have to stop that mitzvah in order to perform kibud avim, because there, where you're actively engaged in the mitzvah, the parent can't demand that you stop doing the mitzvah in order to do kibud avim, because that's the equivalent of saying, don't do Hashem's command in order to come and take care of kibud avim. That's even if it can be done ayidei achirim. The question here between the two positions is only before the fact. If we're about to go do a mitzvah and we have this request for kibud avim, which one takes precedence? Again, both of them agree that where the other mitzvah cannot be accomplished by someone else, that the other mitzvah takes precedence. But in a case where the other mitzvah can be done by someone else, then the machloket is whether you give precedence to the mitzvah or to kibud avim. V'amar Rav Matna, halacha k'Isi ben Yehuda. The halacha here is like Isi ben Yehuda, when it's a mitzvah she'naseh al-yidei acherim, kibud avim takes precedence. Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Shila, Amar Rav Matna, Amar Rav Chista, av she'machalo kvodo, kvodo machu. A father who is mochel forgives the need for a child to provide kavod to him, it is machul. A rav shemachol kavodo, ein kavodo machul. On the other hand, if a rebbe is machul and is kavod, then kavod is not released, and the Talmud still has to provide the kavod for the rebbe. Now, seemingly, the difference here is in the nature of the kavod, which is that when it comes to a parent, the kavod belongs to the parent. It is the need to provide for the parent and give them that honor. And the parent can make a decision as to whether that's their honor or not. Or maybe it's their honor not to have this done, as we saw in the stories yesterday, where Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Tarfon did for their parents things that seemingly were not kavod to the parent, but kavod to the child. But sometimes kibud avim involves the child accepting from the parent or taking from the parent. But that's all for the sake of the parent. If the parent waives that right, then there's no necessity to do it. And that might be a lot of what is discussed here. Why we don't perform these actions today in terms of kibud avim is because there might be a societal default that parents don't expect this from their children, or they wouldn't want this from their children because they would see it as being unusual or crazy and not really a way to give kavod to the parent. On the other hand, when it comes to a rab that's trying to be mochel his kavod, there his kavod derives from the limud Torah, from Torah. And the fact that he's mochel on that, it's something that doesn't belong to him. He's being mochel on the kavod of Torah, which is not his to be machul on. On the other hand, Rav Yosef Amar, Afilo Rav Shemachal Kvodo, Kvodo Machul. Even a Rebbe who's Machal and Kavod, he can't do that. Shenemar, Hashem Alech Lifnehem Yomam. So that it says there that Hashem went before Bnei Yisrael. And obviously Hashem, Talmud Chacham, has Torah, and yet Hashem is Machal and Kavod to go before Bnei Yisrael and to lead Bnei Yisrael. So you see there that you can't be Machal and such Kavod. So Amar Rava, Hakiyashta, how can you compare the cases? Hatam HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amadilehu, when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everything is his. So he can make a decision about what he's mochel on, what he's not mochel on. The Torah, dilehi. So machile the kare. So in the case where it's Torah, it's his, he can make a decision to be mochel on it. Hacha, by the case of the Rebbe, Torah dilehi? How could it be that he's mochel on? It's not his Torah to be mochel on. So it's one thing for Kadosh Baruch Hu to be mochel on, because everything belongs to him, so he can make that decision. But when it comes to Talmud Chacham, the Torah belongs to Hashem, or the covenant of Torah is not his to be mochel on, and therefore, you can't be mochel on kavod. That's not a good proof. Hadar Amar Rava, in the end, Rava relented on this and said, in Torah Dilehi, in the end, it is the Torah of the Talmud Chacham, dichtiv, because it says, ubetorato yegeh yomom v'layla. It says, in his Torah, in the possessive form, yegeh yomom v'layla, he will toil day and night. And you see from this that the Torah does belong to the Talmud Chacham. And as Rashi notes over here, the Gemara in other places shows the contrast between the beginning of the Pasuk and the end of the Pasuk, which is, the Pasuk begins, ki im Torat Hashem chepzo, that in the Torah of Hashem, chepzo is his desire. Over there it calls it Torat Hashem. And then the Pasuk concludes, with Torato yege yomam v'layla. And there it changes it from Torat Hashem to Torato. What is that transition from Torat Hashem to Torato? And Rashi says is, once he's acquired it, that he's done Haga'an, the toiling in the Torah, and the Torah shifts from being Torah Hashem to the Torah of the Talmud Chacham, and therefore the Talmud Chacham has a right to be Mochel because it becomes Torato, that he is seen as being one and the same as the Torah, and therefore his Mechilat Kavod is allowed because he's mochel on the Kavod HaTorah, which is he himself, that is the Talmud Chacham, and that's why he's allowed to do it. Is that really true? V'ha-Rava Mashke Be'hilula Debrei. Rava was acting as a waiter of sorts at the wedding of his son, V'dale Kasala, and then he offered a cup to Rav Papa or the Rav Huna, and to Rav Huna. Over here, Dale can either mean to pour or to mix a drink for them, to place it down in front of them, or you can see here in the Tosfot Riyah Zakein, he says that Dal means Magbiya Lahem Akos Shishatu. He lifted up the cup for them to drink. He offered them and brought them the cup to drink. So then, in that case, he did this for the Rav Papa, the Rav Huna Brei, the Rav Yeshua, Bekamu Mikameh. And despite the fact that Rava was Mochel in his Kavod, because he was acting as a waiter, nevertheless, Rav Papa and Rav Huna Brei, the Rav Yeshua, stood up before him, because they didn't feel he could be Mochel in his Kavod, so they stood up for him. The Rav Mari, the Rav Pinchas Brei, the Rav Yechisto, he did the same for Rav Mari, Rav Pinchas Brei, the Rav Chisto, Velo Kamu Mikameh. And they did not stand up. Ikpit, he was upset about that. Couldn't believe it. They didn't stand up. Vamar. And he said, you could read this one of two ways. Either, Hanu Rabbanon Rabbanon, Vahanu Rabbanon Lav Rabbanon. But, you guys are Talmidei Chachamim, so you don't need to stand up. But Rav Papa and Rav Huna, Brei de Rav Yeshua, are not Talmidei Chachamim, so they had to stand up. So you can read it as a bitmia, or you can read it as a statement of fact. Vamar, Hanu Rabbanon Rabbanon. Those Rabbanon, meaning Rav Papa and Rav Huna, Brei de Rav Yeshua, are real Talmidei Chachamim, because they knew to stand up. Vahanu Rabbanon Lav Rabbanon. These Rabbanon didn't stand up, don't know what the real din is, and they should have stood up. So you see here that for Rava, there was Hakpada here on the fact that they should stand up. Now, you could argue, and this is what the Marsha points out, that maybe this isn't a good proof because Rava was looking at the contrast here. And the fact is that Rav Mari and Rav Pinchas Brei de Rav Chista should have stood up because they saw that Rav Papa and Rav Huna Brei de Yeshua stood up. But maybe in a context where that hadn't happened, maybe Rava wouldn't have been makpid. Maybe Rava's akpada was in the contrast between the two parties. But had nobody stood up, maybe he wouldn't have been makpid. So that's why the Gemara brings another proof. But to Rav Papa, Havamashke Behilula de Abu Mar Brei. So Rav Papa was serving, again, he was the waiter providing the drinks, the bartender at the wedding of his son, Abamar, and he offered a cup to Rav Yitzchak, Brei de Rav Yehuda, whether he poured it or he held it up to him, and he didn't stand up, and he was makbid on it. So here you see he's makbid even when there is no contrast. So afilu hachi, the Gemara says, even though a person's mochel akvodo, hidor me'avid leibo, you still have to give some semblance of acknowledgement of the kavod of the individual. So you may not have to stand up fully, but as Rashi says over here, the hidur means that you still have to move a little bit. That's the way that we provide kavod sometimes today. Even when someone's mochel their kavod, is that you stand up a little bit, or you show that you intend to stand up, or you bend a little bit, to show that you do still have that kavod for the individual, even though they're being mochel in the kavod. And so yes, a rav can be mochel in kavodo, but there's still an underlying requirement of hidur that still exists there, and that's what Rav and Rav Papa were being makpid on. So even though they were implicitly being machul by the fact that they were serving, nevertheless, they felt that these Talmidim should at least give an acknowledgement that it was their Rebbe who was serving them, and not simply some stam waiter that was serving them. Amar Ravashi, afilu man d'amar, harav shemachal kvodo, kvodo machul. Even according to the opinion here, who says that a Rebbe has the ability to be machal his kvod, nasi shemachal kvodo, in kvodo machul. When it comes to the nasi, he does not have a right to waive his kvod. So as we move through the different stages, the parent is clearly in control of their kvod, and they can waive that right. When it comes to a Rebbe, we had a question as to whether the Torah belongs to him, or he has the right to forego the Kavod, because is the Kavod really for him, or for the Torah? He says, even if you conclude that the Torah belongs to him, that's because the status of Talmid Chacham derives from his Torah. Whereas the status of the Nasi derives not only from being a Talmid Chacham and the leader of all the Chachamim, but also from his position of political power, of him being the Nasi. And so maybe he can waive the Torah aspect of it, but he still can't waive the Nasi aspect of it, the leadership aspect of it, or the institution of the Nasiut. So Meitave, is that really true? Maseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Tzadok, Shem Asubim, b'Beit Mishteh, b'Nosher, Rabbi Gamliel. Another case of a wedding where Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Tzadok were all sitting and enjoying the wedding of the son of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel, Omeidu Mashkelehem. Rabbi Gamliel was the waiter and was servicing them. And Rabbi Gamliel was the Nasi. Natan Kos to Rabbi Eliezer, but not alone. He handed over a cup to Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer refused to take it because, obviously, the Kavod of Nasi felt it was beneath the dignity of the Nasi to give him or to serve him. Not to know the Rabbi Yeshua Vikiblo. Rabbi Yeshua, he went to serve him, and Rabbi Yeshua took the cup, no problem. Amalo Rabbi Eliezer, Mazay Yeshua. Elazar ben Hurkana says to Rabbi Yeshua, what are you doing? Anu Yoshvin, Rabbi Gamliel, Umeinu Maskeleinu? How could it be that we're sitting down and Rabbi Gamliel is servicing us? Now, whether the word Ribi is in here or not is subject to a question about the Girsot. Rashi just notes over here, and he has the Girsot of Rebbe, is that Klomar Adam Gadol. That means just he's the great one, or the leading Talmid Chacham of the generation, as Rashi said earlier in the Masechta. And it's a descriptor that's added on to someone who is a Talmid Chacham Muflag Bidoro. So now, Amalei, Matzino Gadol Mimenu Shishimesh. We have someone who was even greater than Rabbi Gamliel, who provided this shimush, and it wasn't a problem. Avram Gadol Ador Haya. Avram was the leader of his generation, and it says by Bnei Chet Nasi Elokim Atabi Rekirbeinu. So he was also called a Nasi. Katuv Bo V'hu Omed Aleihem, and it says when the three visitors came to see him on the third day of his milah, that he was taking care of them, he serviced them, he was the waiter for them. The reason that he did that is because he knew they were malachim. And they were only like merchants or Arabs to him. They weren't like malachi asherit, because we know over there that he offers them to wash their feet and take the dust off their feet, because he thinks that they are people that are mishtachavela vakrap lehem. So the fact that he thought they were regular people, and despite that fact, he serviced them and took care of them. And so, Rabbi Gamliel is greater than Avram Avinu, so why can't Rabbi Gamliel service us? How come here you are just discussing kavod that goes to humans? What about the kavod of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? When it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he brings winds, he brings the cloud, the Murid Matar, and brings the rain. He causes the ground to sprout forth. He provides food for each of us. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu does all of that for us, and it's not beneath HaKadosh Baruch Hu's dignity, then if Rabban Gamliel does it, why is that beneath his dignity? Ella itmar hachi itmar. So now the Gemara goes back to that statement of Ravashi and says that we have to amend the statement, because we see here that a nasi can be machol in his kavod, and both from Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Tzadok, they believe that it was not problematic for Rabban Gamliel to service them or to be a waiter where he was machol on his kavod. Ella itmar hachi itmar Ravashi, afil du mandamar nasi shemachol kavodo kavodo machol. Even the one who says that the nasi can waive his kavod like Rabban Gamliel did, melech shemachalo kvodo en kvodo machul. When it comes to the king does not have a right to waive the need for kavod towards him. Shnemar, the pasuk says, som tasim alecha melech, you will place a king on top of you. And the drasha is, shetei imato alecha. What does it mean that you will place him on top of you? It means that you will fear him, and that he will have a certain standing that will cause fear. And so part of the institution of the king is that there is a distance between the king and the subjects. And so that institution demands that he cannot be mochel in his kavod. So even if personally he would be okay with being mochel in the kavod, he doesn't have the right because the institution itself demands that the king be in a different place or have a different standing than the people. And therefore the king is mochel kavodo, ein kavodo machul. Terabanan. Says mipnei seiva takum, that one should get up because of seiva. Seiva here seems to me someone of age. So that would indicate that someone who is of older age or years, one has to get up. You would think, even before someone who is elderly, ashmai. Rashi over here translates ashmai as being someone who is both advanced in age, as well as asham rasha v'amaretz. But he's someone who is evil and an amaretz. Tosafot takes issue with that and says that if he's a rasha, not only do you not owe him kavod, you actually can denigrate him, or you can hit him, or you can even mevazeh him. So that certainly can't be the explanation over here. Why would the Gemara have a mina that you have to give homage or give kavod to such an individual? So Tosafot says no, that the meaning of ashmai over here is from the word shmama, empty of anything. And therefore he translates ashmai as being someone who is a boor and amaretz. It's someone who is completely ignorant and is an amaretz. And in Okanami, maybe he violates Averot because of a lack of knowledge, but not intentional, not a rasha over here. So the Havamina is that you should have to stand up for anyone. Now, this Havamina of what a Zaken Ashmai is, we'll see later on, has implications because there's an opinion in the Gemara that you stand up for any Zaken because of the Seva. So the definition of Zaken Ashmai over here will be important later on. Tosafot over here entertains the possibility that Zaken Ashmai even includes non-Jewish elderly, but he rejects it. On the other hand, many of the Rishonim believe that it includes non-Jewish elderly, And therefore, if you paskin like the halacha, like the one who says that you do stand up for this quote-unquote zaken ashmai, that would be inclusive of non-Jewish elderly, and you would have to actually give respect towards them. So the one says, tamalim were zaken, because it says, v'hadarta p'nei zaken, which is found there. V'ein zaken el chacham. The word zaken, or the definition of the word zaken is chacham, shenemer, is shimim ish mizikne Israel. She gathered together to me 70 people from the zakenim of Israel. As Moshe gathers together these zakenim or zikne Israel, and over there Rashi says that the continuation of the pasuk indicates what type of zakenim that we're speaking about, because it says over there, asher yadata ki heim zikne ha'am v'shotrav, because they're well known as zakenim, and they're well known because of their chokhmah, and because of their leadership capabilities. So you see that zakenim doesn't simply mean someone who is of age or elderly, but it means someone who also has a certain standing because of their chokhmah. On the other hand, if you look in the Tosfot Rida, Zakeni says, Mizikne Yisrael v'chachamim hayu sherei shata lehem nivuah. Because the reason for Moshe gathering these seven zakenim was to give some of his ruach to these shivim zakenim, so they must be chachamim. In order for them to get the ruach Hashem and the nivuah, it has to be that they were chachamim. Now again, here, this is not necessarily a gzeirah shavah, because if it's a gzeirah shavah, then you would have to say they have to be mumchim as well. So rather, it's a gilui milta, that the meaning of the word zakein is not simply someone of advanced age, but it includes other requirements. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer, Ein zakein ella, the way that we have the girsa is misha kano chokhma. Rashi's girsa seems to be ze shikano chokhma, and Rashi claims that that's an acronym. Zayin kuf nun is ze kana chokhma, and that zakein is not simply, again, someone of his advanced age, but someone who also has chokhma associated with him. The obvious question is, what's the difference between Rabbi Yossi Aglila and the Tanakama, which the Gemara will address in a moment. Shenemar Hashem kanani reshit darko. So you see that Kinyan includes knowledge of Hashem or Reshit Darko, the beginning of his ways. Kinyan that is involved is Kinyan Chokhmah, Kinyan, the ways of Hashem. And therefore, the obligation to stand up for a Zakein is not simply anyone, but someone who also has Chokhmah. Yochel Yamod Mipanav Mimakom Rachok. You would think you'd have to stand up from far away for this individual. Tamalomar Takum Vehadarta. So here, the Gemara parses the pasuk in a way that overrides the two sides. It says, "Mipnei seiva takum v'hadarta pnei zakein." So here, the Gemara conflates between the two pieces and says that there's also a takum v'hadarta. They read them as one shot, and therefore, lo amarti kima l'makom sheis hidur. You only have to stand up in a place where there is hidur, where it shows or demonstrates respect. So that only happens when the person is proximate to you, and therefore it's obvious that you're standing up because of this individual. When they're too far away, it's not obvious, or it doesn't automatically connect between your standing up and that individual. Yochel yehadrenu b'mamon. So you would think maybe the word hidur means to enhance or adorn something, which means that you have to make monetary expenditures, and therefore you'd have to spend money to give kavod to these individuals. Tamalomar takum v'hadarta. Again, the Gemara connects between the two verbs there. Makimash imba chisaron kis, just like standing up doesn't cost you anything. Afidurish imba chisaron kis. So through the homage or the honor that you give to this individual is only in cases where you don't lose money. Yochel yamod mipanavi beta kisei. You would think you'd stand up when you see him in the bathroom. Umi beta merchatz, or in the bathhouse. Tamalomar takum v'hadarta. V'amarti kimal makom sheish hidur. Standing up is only a place where it's a place of kavod, or it would be an indication of kavod. To do it in a place where people aren't dressed, or it's generally a place that's not of kavod, that's not kavod to stand up or give respect for them in those places. Yochel yatzimei nav kemish lo ra'u. Maybe you just close your eyes, and if you don't see him, you pretend you don't see him, and then it's not an issue. Tamalomer takum v'yareta. Says there, v'yareta me'ashem lukecha. And here, the Gemara has a principle, dovar masuv l'leiv. Anything that's given over to the heart, ne'mar bo v'yareta me'lukecha. That you have to fear God, because God is the only one who knows the truth in these cases. So whenever it says, v'yareta me'lukecha, God will discern whether you really just closed your eyes in order to avoid having to stand up, or whether you really didn't see the individual, and that's why you didn't stand up. So if you close your eyes to intentionally avoid having to stand up, or you glance away as if you didn't see them, then Hashem knows the truth about that. And so that's not sufficient grounds not to stand up. You have to know honestly whether you're seeing this individual and should be standing up, or whether it wasn't something that you noticed, and therefore you didn't stand up. V'shimon ben Elazar omer, minayin lezakein shelo yatriach. How do we know that a zakein shouldn't cause the people to have to stand up in his honor? Tamalomer zakein v'yareta. The end of the pasuk that says v'yareta melukecha is juxtaposed to the v'adarta p'nei zakein. And so now again, the Gemara here parses it to conflate the two and says Zakein v'yareta, tells you that the Zakein also has to have a yira, that he can't impose on people to stand up, and he should try to avoid going into places or doing things that cause others to stand up. Isi ben Yehuda omer mipnei sevat takum, says that you have to get up for those that are of advanced age. Afilu kol seva b'mashma, anybody who's advanced age is included in that requirement. That goes back to what I said earlier, that according to Isi ben Yehuda, what is the definition of anyone? And that would depend on what you thought as Zakein Hashmai was earlier on. Rabbi Yossi Glili, Hainu Tanakama. The Gemara asked the question that we posed before, which is, Rabbi Yossi Glili and Tanakama seem to be the same individuals. Ik v'nayu yanik v'chachim. It says the difference between them is someone who is young and wise. Tanakama savar, the Tanakama believes yanik v'chachim lo. That if he's young and wise, that's not sufficient grounds to have to stand up for him. Yossi Glili savar afilu yanik v'chachim. That even someone who's young and wise, you have to stand up for him. So there are two different requirements, as we're going to see in a second. One has to do with age, and one has to do with chokhmah. My time with Rabbi Yossi HaGalili. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yossi HaGalili? Amar lecha, isa gadatcha kramar tanakamo. If it's like what the Tanakama says, im kein ichtov rachmanu mifnei seiva zakein takum v'adarta. It should bring the two of them together and make it into a single entity, which is that there's a seiva zakein. And that means that it's defining what is someone of advanced age is a zakein, someone who's a chacham. And then there'd be only one individual mentioned the pasuk, which is a zakein chacham. Maishna de palginu rachmana, the Torah split the seva and the zakein to teach you this. Lameimar, the high love high, the high love high. That they're independent of each other. The other one's not this one. Shma mina, afilu kanik v'chakim. From that, you would conclude that even someone who is young and wise, you would have to stand up for. And the way, as Rashi explains over here, the word zakein teaches you chokhmah. The word seva teaches you advanced age. And therefore, someone who's advanced age, you would have to stand up for. Someone who's a chacham, you would have to stand up for. Rashi says in the end, Rabbi Yossi HaGalili still believes that the chacham modifies the seva part of it. And therefore, you would not have to stand up for a zakein hashmai. You would still only have to stand up for a zakein who is a chacham. But you'd also have to stand up for a young person who is a chacham. Now Tosfot goes further to explain that and says that when it's a young person as a chacham, he has to be muflag b'chochma, he has to have unusual wisdom or be an unusual talmid chacham. Whereas by a zakein, as long as he has some chochma, it's enough. Because Tosfot says, otherwise, what's the addition of adding in the word seva? If a young talmid chacham gets kavod, then certainly achat kama v'kama, someone who is older, then you would give them respect. That shouldn't be a reason to detract from the kavod. So therefore, the seva has to add something that's not found with the word zakein, and therefore he says there's this distinction between a chacham, that is the requirement by a zakein, versus muflag b'chochma, which is the requirement by a youngster. Doesn't, and that's what Rashi is saying over here also. It doesn't mean that he has to be a talmud chacham, a shmeres talmud chacham, he just can't be a zakein ashmai. But he still has to have some chochma associated with him. And then Isi ben Yehuda comes to argue on that. Now here, there's a machloket rishonim as to what Isi ben Yehuda is arguing about. According to Rashi, Isi ben Yehuda will agree with Rabbi Yossi HaGalili that a young chacham also you have to stand up for, but he includes that a zakein, even sheino chacham, even if he has a zakein hashmai, you would have to stand up for. Others say that Isi ben Yehuda argues on both points of Rabbi Yossi HaGalili, which is he doesn't agree that you need to stand up for a young chacham, and he believes that a zakein doesn't have to be a chacham, you can stand up for any zakein. So then the Tanakama, my time, what's the reason behind the Tanakama? Rabbi Yossi HaGalili, if Rabbi Yossi HaGalili is really right here, that you have to split between the two names, then that the verb should have modified both words over here to tell you that they're two independent parties. Since it doesn't separate them, and everybody agrees that the takum and the hadarta are modifying both the seva and the zakein, in some reasons, shmamina chadu, that it's still one individual that we're talking about here, and that's a seva who is a zakein. And therefore, you'd only have to stand up for a zakein chacham according to the Tanakama. According to Rabbi Yossi HaGalili, you have to stand up both for a chacham as well as a zakein that isn't a chacham, but as long as it's not a zakein hashmai. And then according to Isi ben Yehuda, you have to stand up for any type of zakein. And before we discuss the extent of that, maybe even to include a non-Jewish zakein. What he thinks with regards to a young chacham is a machloket rishonim as to his, whether he's arguing completely on Rabbi Yossi HaGalili, or just arguing on the fact that it has to be a zakein chacham, but it can be even a zakein without a chacham, and then he would also agree that a young chacham you'd have to stand up for. Okay, we're going to stop here on the second line down on the top of Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph.